Oh, I guess I could talk about the fact that after being in our house for over a year, we've started noticing all these animals that are all around our house. And one of them is a coyote that loves our front yard. Okay, so I found out that there's bunnies living under our front porch. There used to be a little salamander-like lizard thing that lived under there.
Aww.
He's now moved to the trash can den.
I'm really proud of
So he
him.
still lives around us, which makes me happy. But I saw that these little bunnies were going also okay, anyway. I saw them going under our porch. And so that makes more sense why that coyote has been going back and forth in front of our yard and
He
like
wants your
interested in our
bunnies.
porch. Yeah, like, okay, please eat the bunnies because they keep pooping in the backyard and then the dogs keep eating it. Because they want to go outside all the time. And I'm like, okay, they just want to run around. The last two times I've let them out, like, Opry will go pee really quick, and then all three of them are looking all over for bunny poop to eat in the yard. And I'm like, everybody get the house now! But, you remember how last year there was one decomposing bunny under our deck?
Ew. Oh, yeah, you tell me about that.
Again, this year, there's at least one, and Drew was able to get it out, but there's still like a smell, like something is decomposing under our deck. And I'm like, I don't know if these bunnies are like getting poisoned in somebody else's yard, and then they
And
come
then they
back to the
die
den in
under
our yard
the.
and they die under our porch, or if they're getting like stuck under our porch and ca like, I don't know. I don't
I don't
understand
know
how
why
there's
you've had
bunnies
more than
dying under our
one.
porch again for the second year in a row, but. And then there was a cat go that went through our backyard, which is kind of impressive because there's really no holes to get into our backyard. I think there's like one, but
Also might just jump.
yeah, no, that's a big fence to jump. But
Some cats are good at jumping.
anyway, I already talked about that really weird animal that I think was a cryptid. Before when that happened, I remember that. But that's all I've noticed in our neighborhood. Okay. So today I'm covering the story of Ashley's Restaurant. I did a lot of research on this. It's like kind of short, but I did a lot.
But I know so much about it.
I read so many different things. So I got my information from Only in Your State, Facebook, 10best.com, My Library World, michaelb.blogspot.com, newspapers.com, weirdus.com. Theratribute.com? Tribune.
It's a newspaper.
What does that say? The Arab Tribune? Yeah, because it's a town in Florida, but would you say it like that? It's Arab. Arab would
I
be
don't
the name of
know.
the town, right?
Yeah, I would think so.
Anyway, Jacksonville.com, BayNews9.com, FloridaHauntedHouses.com, and Wikipedia. Okay, so a little bit of history. Located in Rockledge, Florida, Ashley's Restaurant is housed in a turn-of-the-century Tudor-style wood building. The restaurant is a Space Coast staple. It has been open for over 80 years. It first opened in 1933 as Jack's Tavern, but changed management and names over the years, including the Mad Duchess, the Loose Caboose, Sparrow Hawk, and Gentleman Jim's.
The
It
loose
became, I know
caboose.
that's my favorite one. The Mad Duchess is pretty cool too. It became Ashley's Restaurant in 1985 when it was purchased by Greg Parker, who I think is still the current owner. There was an article from like 2019 that he was quoted in, so that's why I think he's the same owner as today, but I'm not totally sure. So, the menu features traditional American comfort food, including steak, sandwiches, seafood, and salads. It also has an indoor and outdoor bar, which is nice because outdoor is nice to sit and eat sometimes. On their Facebook page, their calendar for September 2022, which was the last calendar post that they've posted, like in their photos for their Facebook page, included Dinner with the Ghost every Monday, Taco Tuesday every Tuesday, musical groups, karaoke, and line dancing. On just like random weeknights, and they also hold trivia every Friday, and I think that's still current, the
That's
trivia every
fun.
Friday, and I think the ghost dinner with a ghost is also current. So first we're gonna start with the true crime of this area. So on November 21st, possibly the 22nd, but I'm pretty sure it's the 21st. That's where most places said it was. 1934, a man driving north along the Indian River noticed buzzards circling overhead and landing on the ground. This piqued his interest, I guess, so when he went to investigate, he discovered a nude, badly decomposed, and mutilated body of a woman on the shore of the Indian River. They discovered the identity of the body later that day by Mrs. Gerald Finney, the landlord of the woman, and it all, some places said that she also worked at this place that the lady was the landlord of, or she just stayed there. I don't know. It was on like every other website. It was like she worked there. She lived there. She worked there. So I don't know.
You can do both.
Yeah, but all of them either it was one or the other. So I was like, I don't know which one it is. The two identifying features on her since she was so badly decomposed were a tattoo of allegedly a rope and the initials BK on the back of her right thigh. And a ruby ring that she always wore. Everywhere said the ruby ring, and everywhere said she had a tattoo, but some places didn't say where it was, and some places didn't say what it was. Mm-hmm. So that's why I said allegedly. The woman was Ethel Allen, and she was 19 years old. So her death had been really brutal. Her throat had been slit. There were stab wounds on her forehead, the base of her skull. The right side of her face had been crushed, and the upper teeth and part of her jaw were missing. One of her legs was almost gone, and it looked like the murderer had attempted to dispose of the body by burning it. Yeah. And that didn't work very well, so then they threw it in the river to hope it floated away far
enough.
Into
the ocean.
So the only evidence found was a nylon stocking that was wrapped around her neck. It was estimated that her body had been in the water for about 3 days. I don't think they ever, in any of the articles that I read, said what her cause of death was. I don't know, like, maybe she was strangled to death and then all the other violent stuff happened after she was fully dead. Or she might have been alive when all the violent stuff happened, but they didn't really say.
Who knows?
So, a police investigation started, and they found that Ethel had been last seen on Sunday when she stopped by a local packing house to say goodbye to a friend. She told her that she was going to Wakuchula, Florida.
I feel like you probably, like, say it in a different way, but I think those are all the right sounds.
Okay. to visit her mother.
If you really put it all together, I think it's probably, like, separated a little bit, but... Like, the emphasis is definitely different.
Too bad.
I don't know what it is. I've never heard
Wakuchula.
Of it before. Wakuchula.
Wakuchula? I think it's Wakuchula. That sounds way more Florida. Anyway. but that's where she was going to visit her mother and that her friend Bill was going to take her. So, before that, she had been at the City Point Inn with a man named William Billy Wilson, who she introduced to several of her friends. And I don't know if they meant, like, several of her friends at the inn, or, like, just several of her friends in general. But anyway, on the day her body was found, Billy backed his car up to his rental house on Barton Avenue in Rockledge. And loaded his things into it and then left the area.
That sounds guilty.
Although locals remembered that his car had Pennsylvania tags, Brevard Sheriff Roy Roberts was notified that 300 people with the same name had licenses in Pennsylvania, and the number on the tag was not noticed by anybody in the area in Florida. So they couldn't really pinpoint.
Because all you go, Pennsylvania. And that's all you bother to remember when you see an out-of-state tag.
Well, especially because it's like your neighbor. Why would you really memorize your neighbor's license plate unless you did think they were a criminal? But anyway, so that's kind of where that lead got lost. Radio broadcasts were made and a reward was offered for his apprehension, but he was never seen again. Ethel was laid to rest in Georgonian Cemetery in Merritt Island, and her case is still unsolved to this day.
Georgiana?
What did I say?
Georgonian.
Maybe I'm dyslexic too.
I think you just, like, your font is not what I would call very reader friendly.
Anyway, so, I mean, if you look her up, like, they tell you what cemetery she's in. So if someone really wants to know, don't go off of my pronunciation.
It's like a really rounded font. Like, almost like, it's like Times New Roman and Calibri combined. It's weird.
Could be. It's an Apple computer. Yeah. So, okay, so now we're going back to Ashley's restaurant because this place is apparently real haunted. So, Ashley's restaurant experiences poltergeist activity, like dishes flying off shelves, lights turning on or off, alarms going off without explanation, patrons being pushed by unseen hands, and guests and staff have seen different things floating like dishes and silverware instead of like just flying somewhere. Mm-hmm. Like it's just like hovering in the air. Some people claim that they have been pushed by an invisible force while on the stairs to the second floor dining area, including a newspaper reporter who, quote, found herself tumbling tail over tea kettle down to the first floor landing after making jokes about the ghost.
Tail over tea kettle.
I had to say that direct quote because tail over tea kettle cracked me up when I was reading this. Okay. So, once a team of paranormal investigators claimed to have seen a chair levitate and move across the room where it gently settled down on the floor. There have been many investigations conducted here, and groups have reported feeling cold spots, swirling smoke-like images, which I just think, like, they mean after they take a picture it looks like swirling smoke instead of, like, their eyes.
I
did seeing it.
I would hope so.
Floating orbs and unusual energy fields. The ladies' room has been reported to be a hot spot. People have said when they are in there, they have experienced, quote, a choking feeling. Others have had toilet paper unravel from their spools in front of them.
Okay, that happens to me all the time, though.
Yes. To be fair, that happens to me a lot.
Like, you don't even have to touch it. It'll just go.
Yes. And it was also almost always in a school.
Yeah.
Either, like, high school or college or, like, anything
and
like that.
It was
that.
Like a combination of like the paper was like too loose on the roll and then the rolls were too loose but also like really clinging to it. So it was a weird combo of things.
Well, it was like the roller that it was on. Yeah, like the roller it was on. Like, I don't know if people are pulling on it or something. But that happens to me a lot. Where was I?
Right. Dang it.
They've seen. Yeah, and then I'm like, well, I don't want to use that.
No,
touch the floor.
You're like, okay, the rest of
so
going
I pick
in the
top layer.
Pick the top.
They've seen windows opening by themselves, which I don't like that. Especially because
no,
I don't know if it's
like
the
that
up
a lot.
Or the out. Either way, it's gross.
Either way, I hate it.
Either way, if I'm in a bathroom.
I'm not going to lie. The up one, scarier.
Yeah, it is. Well, it's like, even if you're just in a bathroom by yourself, even if it's not like a haunted place and you're hearing any noises, like, even if you're not going to the bathroom, like, you feel the most vulnerable when you're in a bathroom alone.
Pants
so
down.
Even, yeah, well, no, like, even if you're not going to the bathroom, like, if I'm washing my hands, I want to get out of there as soon as I can.
Showering
I don't know
terrifies
why.
Me sometimes. On a bad day, real scary.
I don't like it.
I have to bring an animal with me into the bathroom sometimes.
Well, normally, especially if I'm home alone, I'd leave the door cracked, which I do to begin with because the dogs are always trying to break in anyway.
It's like, if someone breaks in while I'm showering, I'm not going to hear it.
No. But I leave the door cracked, and then I get scared because, like, Apollo always barges in, and then you, like, you're washing your hair, whatever, and you just see this giant, like, yellowy-orange mass. It scares me every time. And then he just leaves. Like, okay. Where was I? Okay. The windows, latches unlock, like, you're in the bathroom door unlocks itself. That would just piss me off. Because I think someone's on the outside going, like, just opening it like kids do with, like, regular doors where you get, like, a quarter or whatever and you turn it. Toilets flush on their own. And I did try to look up pictures of this bathroom to figure out if they're the toilets that have the sensor. Because if they're
toilet,
not,
toilet.
That is pretty scary.
Yeah,
if
but
that,
it's just
if it's a push
the sensor
handle.
Ones, those go for never when they're supposed to and always when they shouldn't.
Because if that counts as a haunted bathroom, I've been in many. And faucets turning on by themselves, which is another thing. Like, if it's the automatic ones, that's scary. But if you have to turn it in any way or pull it up, that stresses me out. Okay, so One of the stranger occurrences is that women have reported seeing an apparition in the bathroom mirror of a young girl dressed in, quote, roaring 20s clothes.
Fine.
An employee has claimed to see the feet of a woman wearing around 1930s era shoes in a stall and then gone to, like, I don't know, like, open and knock on it, whatever, mm-hmm. and no
this
one's
place
in there.
So fun.
I know. The inside is, I know, I would go eat there. Okay, so that's pretty much, like, the main ghost story. So mm-hmm. now I'm going to tell you a few encounters from people on different blog posts.
Okay.
That I visited, and then these are people that have, like, either visited or, like, you know, grown up going there or whatever. Okay, so, quote, I know Ashley's is haunted. I worked there when I was 18, in the kitchen, and things were always jumping off the shelf and breaking, like plates and cups. One time, a knife flew across the kitchen like somebody threw it, but nobody was there but me and the cook. The worst times are after the place closes. I used to clean up and would be there all by myself, and I could hear all kinds of noises like voices or people walking. I finally quit because I didn't like being there by myself at night. End quote. And that's from J.S. Another one. Yeah, if that's turning off by itself.
That is not an automatic, but no. Sink right there. They don't have a picture of the toilet. I'm sorry.
I know. I looked. I looked for the toilet. I literally was like, Ashley's restaurant bathroom. Ashley's restaurant toilet. And like these people, whoever my FBI agent is like, what is wrong with
no,
oh,
no,
there
no,
it is. There it is.
The toilet. That's a normal toilet,
but that's got to be the women's room because there's flowers
in it. There's flowers
in it. It is a regular handled toilet, everybody. So that is scary.
As of 3 years ago, they may have since gotten a new one.
I highly doubt it.
But I assume some of these stories are definitely older than 3 years.
Yes, yes. So that's upsetting for both the faucet and... What does the toilet paper holder look like?
Oh. Okay, that's the kind that does spit it out.
Sometimes it does come off by itself. That is correct.
That is the kind that will just spit out the toilet
However,
paper.
The toilet handle and the faucet, those are unexplained. Paranormal activity, I'd say.
Anyway, continue. We've seen the two things we wanted to see.
Even their food looks good.
There's such fun
like,
stained glass.
There.
The food looks good.
It's so
There's
cute.
So many plants.
And a lot of the articles were talking about how like dark the inside of the restaurant is.
It looks so,
so it
dark
makes
inside.
Sense that it's haunted. And I was like, that cracks me up that they're like, darkness equals a haunted restaurant. Okay,
Here's a
anyway.
Little story about the haunted powder room.
I know, I didn't read that. They said they have this whole thing on their menu about it. Okay, another one.
Yes,
quote,
continue.
When I was little, I used to see a young lady in the fireplace area. Ew. I used to complain to my mom about it, so we sat out on the deck.
Fireplace area. I'm sorry, I'm finding these as you're saying them at this point. It's really funny.
It is funny. It's like it's meant to be. Whenever going inside to use the restroom, my mom would have to go with me and stand on the side of me so that I would not be tempted to look at the fireplace. Okay, next one. Quote.
Freak out, then we'd have to leave the restaurant. Yeah. My mom would be pissed.
You scream about the ghost in the corner one more time. Quote, I have experienced a lot of strange phenomena at the restaurant. A waiter that took our order and never returned. A feeling of being pushed on the narrow service steps. A purse being thrown into the toilet.
I'd love that.
Which I read that when I was doing this research. And I just started laughing in my office alone.
Here's the, I don't think it was thrown. I think they dropped it. And I think they blamed the ghost.
That's what I said. And then Drew was like, what are you laughing about? Because he was in his office working. And I was like, quote, a purse being thrown into the toilet. And he was like, what are you talking about? And I said, somebody sent a ghost through their purse in the toilet. And he goes, I don't think they do that. And I was like, no, I'm pretty sure they probably dropped it in there on accident. And then the purse, like, pulled it off their shoulders. But anyway, I thought that was so funny. A purse being thrown into the toilet to a set of Victorian boots that disappeared in the ladies' room from under the stall.
That's fun.
End quote.
I don't
so
know
they've
where
also
the Victorian
seen
boots
an,
came from.
I was gonna say they've also seen boots, and then it's like, did you check to make sure it wasn't
there
the lady
wasn't
that
somebody
was
in like steampunk,
and they left really quickly. Okay, so that's the end of those little ghost quotes. It is said that there is a ghost of a little girl. Who's about 4 or 5, who messes with younger children.
Like the little girl that the kid kept on seeing next to the fireplace, and his mom would block it.
No, they said it was a woman.
Oh, I remember.
There was another. I don't remember if it was in an article or if it was a quote that somebody had put on there, but they said like this little girl was at the restaurant with like her grandpa or something, and kept asking her grandpa to tell that little girl to stop messing with her. And there were no, like, little kids around her. So they were like,
I hate that.
And the ghost of a man. That's a ghost.
And the ghost. A really angry child.
And the ghost of a man has also been seen, but I don't think he's really been associated with anything. Maybe the touching. But they just said, like, those are two ghosts that they've, like, confirmed
We've seen
or something.
These full-body apparitions
There have been claims that Ethel Allen is one of the ghosts who haunts Ashley's restaurant. Legend has it that she was a regular at Jack's Tavern back in the day, and that it might have also been the actual last place that she was alive instead of the inn. There's also a rumor that she was actually killed in the restaurant storeroom. There's someone who's been doing research into the case who thinks that it's more likely she was killed in a nearby meatpacking plant, because the only other suspect in her case was a night watchman there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, like, her theory, but also I'm like, well, it really could have been literally anywhere in the area, like... Nobody really seemed to look too hard to her case for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, hold on.
They're so into their ghosts. It's adorable.
There's also some accounts that she worked at Jack's Tavern. So it's really just like local legend that this young girl who was killed is either a ghost there, or she used to work there, she used to spend all of her time there, like this, that, the other thing. Or was killed there, whatever. So there's a book called Ashley's Shadow. From a true cold case murder comes a haunting legend by Charlie Carlson about the hauntings and Ethel's murder. There's also a documentary called The Haunting of Ashley's Restaurant that aired in 2020. And that is the story of Ashley's Restaurant.
Well, it's a fun story.
And I know I liked that story a lot. And I also... found something weird whenever I was doing my research. So last week's episode was the Allen house. Then this girl who gets murdered, is her last name's Allen.
And so then I had to find the next one has to be
coming up.
No,
with these
Audrey,
multiple,
what are you doing?
Multiple other things.
You're gonna curse us.
You'll see if the name Allen comes up again. But anyway, that's my story for this week. I liked it. I would go eat there.
Looks tasty.
I would spend my
Very
time
cute.
There. I wouldn't go to the bathroom there. No, I would. I would try to see if a ghost will come
if
out.
If I gotta go, I gotta go.
That's true. Anyway, what have you got for us?
So I have something a little bit different. This one I've titled Lake Okeechobee because it's centered around it.
Okay.
But most of it's just about a hurricane.
Okay.
So it's in like... three separate parts, and the first and the last part go together, and then the middle part seems like out of place, but telling it the other way didn't feel natural either, and this way I liked better. So it'll seem a little bit disjointed, but I know that going in. Okay, so my sources are the Historical Marker Database, Wikipedia, and WeirdUS.com. So Lake Okeechobee is the second largest body of fresh water located entirely within the contiguous United States. So Lake Michigan's the first largest. The other Great Lakes are technically bigger, but they're also partially in Canada.
Yes.
So it covers 730 square miles. In comparison, Nashville is 497.5 square miles. The city of St. Louis itself is 66 square miles because it's a little baby... technical city.
That's so funny.
And then like St. Louis County is 523, just to give you some bearing on how big the lake is. So it's bigger than St. Louis County.
Okay.
So it's large enough that you're able to stand on one side, like on one shore, and not see the other shore. So it feels like you're at the ocean.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's fresh water. So native populations lived around the lake for thousands of years. And at the time of European contact, the Calusa lived around the lake. I don't know if that means, like, the whole shoreline was just this population, or if, like, exactly where the Spanish first encountered people and the lake was this group. That's not specified. This is a big lake, so I could see more than one population being able to live on it, right?
Yeah.
So either way, the Calusa called the lake Miami. You know, like Miami, mm-hmm. but with extra letters.
Yeah.
And it means big water. And by other groups, the lake was called Serope and Ikichubi. The lake was re-encountered by numerous European explorers, but was both so large and so far inland in Florida. I know Florida does not seem that big, but Florida's really gross to get into. So basically anything that's not on the coast is, it's a whole, you know, El Dorado level exploration into the jungle, right?
Yeah.
So the Europeans re-encountered the lake many times. It's so far inland and so large that it becomes a literal mythical body of water, like the Fountain of Youth or the City of Gold, like El Dorado. It's like has that level of, like,
that's funny.
That's how mythical it was. Yeah, that's how infamous it was back before people could easily travel through Florida. For a time in the early 1800s, Lake was known to European mapmakers as Mayako Lake or Mayako Lake. After the displaced Mayak people who had moved to the shores in the early 1700s, so they're a native population that had moved because of, you know, European pressures. So European settlers were few and far between, and the early settlers in the area arrived around the turn of the century, so like 1900s, give or take 10 years on either side of 1900.
Yeah.
People were not living, despite how coastal it is, it does not have like the old history. Should also note that it's not just European settlers, there's like African people here as well, whether it be as slaves or as like pioneers. But that's not how anything ever reads. They're always like, just the Europeans are here. No one else has ever done anything anywhere. They don't exist. So it took forever for people to get there. And once the non-indigenous populations did arrive, which is, I remember, like, basically at earliest, the 1890s, the settlements didn't last past the 1960s. It's just because the area was too swampy for capitalism. It just did not work for the farming methods that people were using there did not work because it was too gross.
Yeah. And that makes sense.
People constantly were losing their tractors forever in the muck. Like, it was an issue.
Not a lot of things can thrive in those conditions.
Yep.
Besides prehistoric creatures that still eat people today.
Right? Alligators.
People and chihuahuas. It's mostly their diets. I still love that people really be hating on alligators. Like,
I love alligators.
Like, how dare the alligator attack a human?
You're living near their water. Yeah. Go away.
How dare that alligator attack that human that was swimming in their home? I can't believe it. I just don't.
Audacity.
I can't believe people still blame wildlife for hurting humans. It just doesn't make any sense.
I'm sorry. The human was dumb. So in 1926, the Great Miami Hurricane hit the lake, and it killed around 300 people. Caused $100 million worth of damage, and I think that's today's money.
What year was it?
1926. So people have been there for,
like,
you
say 1963?
Around 30 years.
Okay.
And it essentially ends the Florida land boom that had occurred since the Florida East Coast Railway had been, like, put in. So, it's that college that's in St. Augustine, Florida. So it's an F.
Flagler.
Yeah, no. Flagler was, like, a crazy entrepreneur, and one of the things that he did was build that railway, and that railway allowed access to what were basically the jungle, right?
Yeah. I didn't know that. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
And like, because it wasn't going inland, but it was making going up and down the coast so much easier that it was easier to go inland then, because you were, the rest of your travel wasn't so painful.
Yeah.
Anyway, so there's a land boom after that happened until 1926, and people just basically stopped moving into inland Florida. So on September 6th, 1928, a storm forms on the west coast of Africa. And about 48 hours later, it was considered a Category 1 hurricane. On September 12th, the system has become a Category 4 hurricane. It hits Guadeloupe, where it kills about 1,200. It also hits Martinique, Montserrat, and Nevis. It kills people there as well, but the numbers apparently weren't substantial enough for Wikipedia to bother to care.
Yeah.
The next day, the storm peaks as it at a Category 5 when it hits Puerto Rico, destroying 24,728 homes, damaging 192,444 homes, and leaving 500,000 people homeless, as well as causing $789 million worth of damage in today's money and killing 312, which is impressive for how many places it damaged that only killed 312 people.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's an insane storm. It's still, I think, to this day, the strongest storm to ever hit. I think it's the only Category 5 to ever hit Puerto Rico.
Wow.
One of the statistics that was with the Miami, the one from 2 years prior to the one I'm telling you about right now, the 26 one, the Great Miami Hurricane. It said if it had hit Miami today, it would have caused like $1.62 billion worth of damage because of the population that is there now.
Yeah.
And like an identical storm with the path it took would have caused this damage because we know what would be there. Yeah. You know? So that's what happened to Puerto Rico. It's a lot of damage.
Uh-huh.
So after that, the storm weakens, becomes a Category 4 again when it hits the Bahamas on the 16th, where 18 people are killed. On the 17th, the system makes landfall near West Palm Beach, so now it's on mainland Florida. The city has more than 1,711 homes destroyed, which is absolutely nothing in comparison to what happened to Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
The most deadly portion of the storm, however, was not the winds, but the storm surge, which is generally the case with hurricanes, is the storm surge is the bad part. But this particular storm surge caused Lake Okeechobee to break its... like, it's fall out of its lake. It's, you know, like, think of it like a dam break, but there's no dam on Lake Okeechobee. It's just the shores gave way, and it floods hundreds of square miles with up to 20 feet of water at its deepest point. So that's a lot of water.
Oh, my gosh.
Which is, like, a combination of both the storm surge and
that's
the...
That's crazy. 20 feet?
The
that's, like, my biggest
lake
fear.
Leaking out, yeah. And it does it in, like, this southeastern portion of the lake and then a little bit on the north... No, southwestern point of the lake and the northeastern point of the lake. But the southwestern portion gets hit worse. But it's also less populated, I believe. So the flood caused 2,500 people to drown.
Ugh.
Just drown.
Oh, that's so terrible. I'd be one of them.
So in total, the storm killed more than 4,112 people. In Florida, 1,278 head of livestock were killed, and 47,389 poultry as well.
Oh, not the chickens.
All the chickens.
Those alligators were really thriving in these times.
Most of the flood survivors and bodies were found washed up in the Everglades, especially if it was from that southern portion of the break. And a significant portion of the bodies were never found.
Alligators.
Also just covered up by sediment and stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
So we have a few specific stories. On Kramer Island, which is located, there's a whole bunch of little islands, I think, like in the northeastern corner portion of the lake. And I think Kramer and Rita are both islands within that system. And they're some of the first areas that, like, have semi-successful, like, post-European contact non-native settlements.
Mm-hmm.
So they did pretty good. People went to their houses, stood on furniture to stay above the water, and as their houses floated away, I assume with them inside on their furniture, and most of the houses floated into a row of pine trees,
where they got caught, so they didn't get to float further away, which is probably very good for them.
Yeah.
And only one person on that island drowned, so that's good for them. On Rita Island, a number of people managed to get under their roofs, only to be killed by trees that they floated under, like getting struck by trees as they floated under them. Or worse, a number of people were fatally bitten by cottonmouths.
Oh.
Who, like, also went up under the roof. And here's the thing. I like snakes. Snakes are fun. I don't trust cottonmouths. I've been chased by cottonmouths. Cottonmouths, I'm pretty sure, bite for sport. This is not scientifically proven. This is personally based on experience. They're aggressive for fun. So I don't think it's because they, like, oh, are in the same place at the same time. Oh, no, scary person got to bite them. And here's the thing. They're probably shooing away the snakes because they are dangerous and therefore encouraging being bitten. But also, like, they just seem to be biting. I was doing work down south of Texarkana, Arkansas. And they're like, you need to wear snake gaiters here. The snakes are real, real bad. And I was like, what? I've never had to wear snake gaiters before in a project because generally you see the snake and both you and the snake look at each other and we both say, okay, I'll go this way. I'll go this way. Goodbye. Because snakes don't want to bite you.
No.
This stinking cotton mouth sticks his head up over the grass because it's tall grass. Sticks his head up over the grass, looks at me, and starts to speed towards me. I ran.
I would have killed it with my shovel immediately.
I didn't have a shovel on me.
No. If you're telling me I gotta wear something to protect my legs from a snake, I'm having like 3 machetes at least. There's no freaking way. I'd be like, okay, so where are my weapons?
And they'd be like,
we don't have any for you. I'd be like, then I'm not going. There's no way. That's anyway, horrific.
So yeah, a whole bunch of people got fatally bitten by cottonmouths on Rita Island while they were on their roofs.
How quickly do you die from that?
I have no clue.
I feel like it's pretty slow, honestly.
I feel like it's probably not fun.
That's terrible.
It burns a lot.
Ew, I don't even want to think about getting bit by a freaking snake. That makes me want to vomit thinking about it.
So others around the lake that survived, they survived by climbing trees. They survived by climbing into the rafters of warehouses and other such buildings. And these buildings would usually be floating away. These buildings were not staying attached to the ground. They're just floating away as buildings.
They're like the ones you see on the news these days in the hurricanes where there's people on the top of them and they're just going down the river.
Just floating down. People holding onto barges. One woman tied herself to the top of a telephone pole.
She says, I'm staying right here. I don't care what happens.
A lot of people who were inside the houses seeking shelter, like on furniture and stuff, did not know the houses were floating until the houses would crash into things.
Oh my God.
And they'd be like, what the heck just happened? What hit us? Like, what was that? Because they had assumed things were floating into them, you know, like logs or boats. No, it was them, in fact, that was moving and then hitting other things. One teenager floated from Belglade to the Everglades Experiment Station, which was about 8 miles, and survived. And that's a long distance to be floating.
Yeah. And
I think that's the longest reported distance that I got, so that's why I included it. So as the floodwaters remained for several weeks, there was no way to deal with, like, the extreme number of bodies that had all of a sudden been produced by the storm. Because they couldn't bury them there, and, like, crematoriums, one, are either inundated as well, or, like, can only handle so many people in a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
So, like, what do we do? So between the flooding that happened and the fact that 75% of the fatalities were black migrant workers, whose bodies were either difficult to identify because no one around there knew who they were, or just, like, you know,
no one
bad
cared.
Things happen to migrant workers today too. So between the floods and the significant population that was not able to be identified in a timely manner, which is another important part, like, people would have gone and identified the body if they could get there.
Yeah, they're still flooding
but they can't.
A giant storm just happened and it's hard to get there.
So they made a number of mass graves to deal with the situation.
I mean, I thought you were going to say they put them in the ocean.
So the white victims of the storm were buried in particular mass grave. They were given formal burials, and the few caskets that were available were given to them. They were all buried at the Woodlawn Cemetery in downtown West Palm Beach. And it was the only mass grave that happened from this storm to get, like, a timely memorial. So, like, the service was right after for the people, right?
Was it, like, a giant pit?
Yeah, that's what a mass grave is.
Like, is it real deep or real wide?
Both. It's not, like, super... I think it's, like, it's going to be, like, slightly deeper than your 6 feet down because usually you put more than one layer down. It's usually, like, 2-3 max if you're doing it, like, orderly. If you're doing it, like, non-genocide style.
Yeah. I'm just wondering.
So they're usually like the ones that Dad worked on in the Pacific. They're just
long.
They're like, yeah, they're long and as deep as they need to be. Okay. Black migrant workers and pioneers, because there's also people who just settled there in this area because it's gross and no one wants to live there, and that's where a lot of Black people found freedom. So Black migrant workers and pioneers, and not that they're seeking here, but just like,
yeah,
there's no one else is around them to bother them kind of freedom. So Black migrant workers and pioneers, on the other hand, were burned in funeral pyres or thrown into mass graves. The major ones, there's two major ones. There's the one in West Palm Beach where 674 people were buried. And then there's one in Port Mayaca Cemetery east of Port Mayaca, which contains 1,600 bodies.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
One of them?
One singular. Just one spot? One of, yeah, there's two really big ones. One has 674. One has 1,600 people in it.
That's crazy.
And then there's at least three other known small ones. There's one in Miami Lock that has at least 22 people, one in Orton that has 28 people, and one in Sebring that has 22 people.
Did they, like, dig them up to find out the number, or was that recorded?
I think for the little ones, it's recorded. I think that's, like, what the local population did for the individuals they had dead around there versus, like, these other ones are, like, big areas just throw everybody in. Death. Yeah. I think that's what's happening. I didn't look at where these areas were to see how that might lay out. There's more research I could have done, but like that's like thesis research. Statistics. there's also a possible fourth location at Loxahatchee. X's confuse me in words. So there's a possible fourth location. There's also possibly more because, you know, with minority populations, things often don't get recorded.
Yeah.
So the Black mass graves were not marked. Even, like, right away, they weren't marked. In 1991, the West Palm Beach mass grave was formally blessed and recognized both through excavation and ground-penetrating radar. They were able to, like, figure out where it exactly was, and then a marker was erected on site in 2001. That's the first time that, like, anything was formally there to identify the location. More work is still being done on the site, and they're having issues with it because the land was continually bought and sold from, like, the time it was, the people were, until, from the time the ground was covered up again, till the present, some of it is still just owned by a business that works there.
Yeah.
Part of it has been paved over, there's a street there now, because it was originally a pauper cemetery, and I think it was almost immediately abandoned as a pauper cemetery as soon as it was filled with this mass grave. And then after that, it was just sold to businesses and stuff and things. So that's why they're doing all this work on the Fort Myers? West Palm Beach Cemetery, is because a lot of inappropriate things have happened to it. The
desecration.
I have no clue what happened to the little ones. I think they're probably fine because the Port Mayaca Cemetery is also fine, but it's also literally within a cemetery. It was always a cemetery, and it's still a cemetery to this day. Like, if you look at the location of it in the thing, there's stones all around it from, like, normal cemetery activities. So that one's safe, that's good because there's a lot of people there. So that is the 1928 hurricane and then aftermath, and it's the aftermath that made me find the story. And I was like, that's crazy. But the something aftermath I've never heard of. Is also it led to, like, a singular sentence about how this is not the first time there's been a weird amount of bodies around, like, Okeechobee. And I was like, hold on, what?
Dun, dun, dun.
So then I had to search this, and this part immediately I knew what it was from my background because I know about Florida bog bodies and like indigenous burial traditions.
Bog bodies.
So as soon as I heard this story, I was like, it's just more Florida bog bodies. Like, this is just how indigenous people in the area like buried their dead.
And people do just be getting lost in mud.
No, but these are like very specific.
Oh, okay.
It's not like, why are there so many dead people?
Yeah.
Like, but that's what everyone thought is the thing. Before we had like confirmed that this was a way that people were burying their dead in this area, people were like, why are there so many bodies here? So I'm going to list all the things that people thought happened.
Okay.
Bigfoot's
got to be one of them.
The earliest European settlers in the area, they would report human skeletons in the shallows on the south end of Lake Okeechobee. And other stories would have fishermen catching human skulls in their nets. So, like, from the very beginning of, like, written record in the area, once people are actually living there, they're like, there's bodies. There's a lot of bodies here.
Yeah.
You're seeing the bodies, too, right?
Is it just me that's catching all these?
So, during low water especially, these settlers would like, describe going to the shallows, and it would just look like a pumpkin patch. There were so many skulls.
Oh, my goodness.
While surveyors were clearing land in the early 1900s, they uncovered at least 50 bodies that were covered in just a few inches of sand. And this was on a specific island that was not naturally occurring, but was due to a new permanent water level in the lake after they constructed canals, which has like lowered the water overall. So this used to be a shallow area in the lake, and it became an island. So now all these bodies were exposed.
Yeah.
So these settlers are searching for an explanation. They're wondering if these bodies are from the Seminole Wars, because there's stories about how, like, one time a group of Seminoles were almost captured, and so they all decided to commit suicide in the lake instead, which is nonsense, because the Seminoles won that war. Both of them. And there was no major battles in the area, so it wasn't, like, a whole bunch of... That's just where they threw them all after a battle or something. Some of them were like, it's the remnants of an ancient hurricane, like what happened in 1928, like the hurricane we just learned about. They're like, and everybody died from the big flood. And it's like, here's the thing, that is possible. That's possible. But it doesn't make sense either with how they're all found, like, consistently at one level, at one depth, with, like, a, you know, buried in a certain way with certain bones, because they're burials, not... Because most people are consistently describing these bodies being in a certain way. Unless the area has been disturbed and then all the bones are everywhere.
Yeah.
I don't think these bodies are there anymore because I've not found any recent things. I think the flood that happened in 28
moved them
washed
all.
Them all away, which is really unfortunate because that'd have
been,
like,
the lake is like
discovery.
Overflowing and coming out of the old lake.
Especially that would make the southern portion had some of the biggest. That's where, like, most of the flooding happened, and that's where most of these bodies are reported. But, like, it's like, so the article I was reading through, the author didn't like what I think the explanation just is. Like what I think the factual explanation is this was, an ancient indigenous cemetery.
Yeah.
That has, they buried all of their bodies there for a very, very long time. So that's why there's hundreds of bodies, because I don't know if you've ever gone to a cemetery, but there's a lot of people buried at these. Like, if you've gone to a small town and their cemetery is larger than their population has ever been.
Have you ever tried digging in a cemetery?
People keep being born.
And seeing what you
and
find.
And then dying. And the numbers add up. It's called addition.
Yeah, it's like if people lived in the area, I don't know why you wouldn't put two and two together
years.
And be like, oh.
But the author of this article is like, this is too many bodies. It has to be something crazy. And I'm like, that's just what a cemetery is. Like, they would bundle up the little bodies and they would stake them in into the shallows, into the peat, into the marshy bits. And that's where the bodies would sit and stay staked there until they decomposed fully. It was just the bones sitting there on the bottom. Like they find them with, like, pretty good consistency in Florida still to this day, in, like, the smaller lakes and areas. Like it's a problem when you're constructing new things. You have to check for bog bodies before you do anything.
Good. You shouldn't be building the bogs anyway.
No.
Let the natural habitat be.
Just let the water stay where it is. It's going to kill you anyway if it wants to. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was the crazy... It was the... I told the story so I could just tell you about the pumpkin patch of skulls.
Yeah.
And that's also...
Interesting.
I love floods. I think they're fascinating. I love hearing about how people survive floods.
What they natural disasters, I'm going to say.
Because they do... That's when, like, the true primal human comes out, is when they're scrambling up trees and, like, doing crazy things like that. Or it's, like, all of a sudden, they have returned to their natural roots and they're raccoons, right? Like, they're scrambling up anything and everything. And
that's why you said most of these people drown, and I said that would be me, because I can't swim. I've got no...
I also can't climb.
Like, I've got upper body strength, but what is it really for?
But, like, I like reading all the crazy ways that they survive. Like...
survival. I mean, that's where there's so many, like, I survive. So like, cool. Survival shows and, like, stories are the coolest.
But it was just, like, a weird combination
of,
like...
even, like, do you remember that story of that girl who, like, both of her arms got chopped off by a serial killer and she still survived?
Yeah! Or that other girl, who, she and her friend were having a sleepover and someone broke in and killed the friend and slit her throat and she had to crawl through the window to the neighbor's house. And, like, she couldn't speak, though, because her, like, vocal cords had been slit. She was, like, bleeding out. Yeah. But then she got better.
Yep. Those stories are so... I don't think those could be
murder
me,
stories and not natural disaster stories.
No, it's still an I survived. Yeah. Like, what people can actually do is so crazy that, like, why do we get killed by a cold?
But yeah, that's why I gave you the history of the lake in the beginning, so I could tell you the weird body situation at the end.
But I always start with a history, even if it has nothing to do with the rest of the story.
You should know. It's just good to know.
Don't be ignorant.
It sets it up.
Anyway.
So that's Lake Okeechobee and all of its bodies.
Well, try not to kill anybody and don't mess with Ouija boards. Bye.